This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and here is the place to learn about local happenings, especially when we've got the mayor here.
Oh, yeah.
So hey. Welcome to our noon hour. We're here Monday through Friday talking about local issues that are affecting your life, your quality of life, your wallet, and making sure you are in the know of things are happening in your community. Some fun, some exciting, some frustrating. But today we'll get a rundown a little bit for the first couple of segments of the show and talk to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. Welcome back,
Mayor Chuck. Thank you for having me on.
Nice to have you. It's fun because they have on and maybe there's nothing been in the headlines, right? And we don't know what the city council's up to or we don't know what's going on with some of the departments in the city.
Right.
And the mayor's here to give us the lowdown.
The lowdown.
take a shot at it.
And you're gonna go on vacation.
Yes, I am.
I see your vacation mood. Did they let you go on vacation before you passed a budget? Or did they chain you to the mayor's desk?
You don't pass the budget till the end of June.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
One of the things, I'm just going to go down my list if you don't mind.
No, not
things to talk about. There's always endless things to talk about.
He's got a laundry list.
Here at Newsmakers, we like to encourage people to be in the know and mm-hmm. involved.
Right.
Because the world is run by those who show up. So boards and commissions, there's 19 of them in the city.
Yes.
You guys take applications anytime, right?
We do. And we have regular meetings of a committee of the city council that goes through applications and moves people forward. And what we find really often is we don't have enough applicants or have any applicants for some of the boards and commissions. Some of them require very specific residence requirements, various kinds of occupations that they try to get on various boards and commissions. So I really recommend that people apply for any area of interest they're in. I mean, this is where you get on to the budget committee, the planning commission, the library board. Traffic safety.
Police review board.
Police
airport,
review
board. Senior center. Yeah, traffic, parks and rec, all sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, passion. If you think there ought to be speed bumps and stop signs in your neighborhood, this is the traffic safety is the committee for you. And it's actually a fairly active committee. So
these things don't require a lot of time. And folks, if you're competent and you can and you're at least have a degree of rational passion, you know, because the people that fill out the forms, they might be loony. They might be just flat out stupid.
Again, there is a committee in place that hopefully filters out the loony.
I've seen one or two slip through.
Well, it happens, but generally we get really motivated applicants. It's folks who want to spend a few hours a month, and I'm talking it can be very few hours mm-hmm. a month. Some committees meet only on demand. Right. Police review committee.
Ethics committee. There's an ethics committee as well.
There is an ethics committee, and I'm not sure they've met in years.
Years and years.
But we do have applicants for it. People are very interested. But a lot of it is responding to public interest. The one that's been real active lately has been the library board, which is one that's usually fairly quiet. I think it meets monthly. And in fact, I served on the library board for a few years, and it looks at library policy. It advises the city council on library policy, and we've had a fairly hot issue going on as the city is sort of going, and it does this all the time, but it got to be a fairly aggressive vetting of the city's library collection, and it became has been a fairly hot issue. Right now it's the vetting of it, which is really the removal of damaged books, old books that are out of date, not old, but out of date. And then books that don't get checked out. And there's been quite a discussion in parts of the community as whether or not we're getting rid of books that ought to be part of what's referred to as the core collection. So when you go down to the library, books you might not have thought of will be there to take a look at. And it's gotten pretty controversial. The city council is still reviewing the librarian and library advisory board's policy on this.
And it's funny because I just reached out to the librarian just yesterday on behalf of Newsmakers.
Good time, good person to have on right now.
Try to get them on the show.
There you go.
There's a lot of things that the library does that the public's not aware of. I don't necessarily want to talk about which books are coming and going. We might, you know, the people would be careening off the road while listening to Newsmakers on the radio.
You know, only 25% of the people here in Salem have library cards or use the library actively. But that 25% really pays attention to what's going on there. Plus, like you said, the library has a whole range of programs that go on over there, from the Scrabble Club to travel clubs to children's reading time.
Lots of kid stuff.
The list goes on.
All right, I'm going to switch gears now. Hard right turn, move away from boards and commissions, although that is a call to action to you, the Newsmakers listener, right there. Get on the City of Salem website, cityofsalem.net, find boards and commissions, find something you've been willing to serve on, but only if you're intelligent, please.
Well, and if you're interested, call my office.
Put some stipulations on it.
Yeah, call the mayor's office, and they'll put you in touch with the right place to get your application and what's available and things like that.
All right, the Housing Authority. So we talked about this actually on air last time you were off air last time you were here. We didn't have time to touch on it, but the Northeast Salem, we used a combination of urban renewal tool, to create new housing options that has social services built in.
Yeah, what was going to be a nursing home on Fisher Road, and then ran into difficulties completing their project, and the Housing Authority spotted it, and it creates about 40 units of transitional type housing. Once completed, we're in the process right now of really redoing the building, and it'll include social services as well as some medical services. A great deal of it will be targeted on to the homeless population and getting them into some housing with social service.
Those people that you referred to are kind of like the hardest to house.
Yeah.
Last week we were talking about how do you house somebody who has no credit or horrible credit, right, and no money, and a criminal record, and so forth, and no housing, you know, record. How do you get somebody like that to transition? And this fills that gap?
It does. It's done in consultation with ARCHES, the community action agent, the portion of the community action agency that works closest with the homeless, and they have identified the hardest to house people in Salem. They've probably been homeless. Well, not probably. They've at least been homeless about 10 years.
Wow.
So they really haven't been in housing and need a great deal of assistance in moving into housing. But so far, the program's working quite well. We're running around a 95% success rate of people being able to stay in housing, which is part of the trick.
Wow. All right. So we got to take a break. Darn it. All right, we're going to take another turn and talk about some more stuff. Here with we've got with us in Newsmakers, Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. So stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren. You're listening to Newsmakers. We're talking with Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem about things happening before the council. In addition to the budget, we might get to the budget here in a little bit. I was about to ask you, we were talking in the first segment about boards and commissions, how people can serve. I'd like to switch and start talking about how can people communicate, because we do talk on Newsmakers a little bit about the accessibility of our elected leaders.
Sure. And now, we get the mayor every week, but
I call
normal people don't.
Yeah. Other radio stations don't.
No, they don't. That's what I mean, normal here, people.
KYKN, you're listening. 1430. Yeah. my friends in California, you know, and it's all these people, high density, they're in California. I bet they would not recognize one elected leader in their community.
No.
I bet they wouldn't be able to say their name or recognize them at the Safeway. Right? I mean, in Salem, it's a little different, I feel.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the county commissioners, and they're active, and they're out and about. And if you're involved in stuff, and the mayor will tell you from his schedule, if you're involved and you're having an event, the mayor comes and supports. You know, I mean, it doesn't even have to be city business.
Right.
No. Sometimes it's just a positive group or a positive initiative in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm invited to a lot of different events, either to speak or just be present. And I go to most of them if I can get them into my schedule. I find it's a really good opportunity. Gives people a chance to just walk up and talk to you, which is real important. And I get a lot of email and some phone calls.
Email's my question.
Yeah.
When we say email your counselor or your mayor, do you guys read them and are they effective?
I think they are effective. I read them all, and I respond to all of them.
Good for you. Good for
there
you.
There are, if nothing more than just say thanks for writing. Mm-hmm. But usually I try to give at least an opinion or sort of an avenue for affecting the issue people are concerned about. I hear about a lot of neighborhood issues, complaints between neighbors over things going on, you know, loud music, or I don't like where the RV is parked.
Wait,
or,
they're emailing the mayor on that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I hear about it pretty almost, maybe 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Wouldn't it be a non-emergency police call for that?
Well, and that may be the best solution, and I'll suggest that. But more commonly, what I do is move their question forward to the appropriate staff person who can actually affect it.
Nice.
I'm asked to do things, a lot of things that I really can't do. I'm not directly involved in the management of the city. I think there's a real misunderstanding of the role of the mayor in a town like Salem that has a manager, a city manager who really is the operations guy and manages the program. He's actually the only person we can hire and fire. And so I'll advance it. Community, probably the most common one are code violations. Mm-hmm. And
code
I send those forward to Brady Rogers, who runs code enforcement in the city. And police matters. You know, I got a ticket. I'm really unhappy about the way this happened to me. And I'll advance that to the police chief.
Speaking of that, I got one to address.
Did you get a ticket?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
City of Salem, though.
Marion County.
Oh, were you speeding?
I was.
Yeah. There's not much you can do with speeding.
Thanks.
pay your price to society.
Even though I know the mayor, he won't help me.
Just go pay your ticket.
And I plan on.
I've gotten them. I know exactly the problem.
And shout out to Brady Rogers. He's been there a long time.
Yeah, he's
been
a fabulous
around.
So he's good at his job
huge,
then.
He is.
Excellent.
And it's a huge resource in terms of the institutional knowledge.
Sure.
And things he's been involved. But code enforcement, if your neighbor's grass is 4 feet tall, you know,
right.
You call code enforcement. You don't need to call the mayor.
Or you can call the mayor. I mean, they do, and I just pass it along. And then we've had, I think, probably right now the most common are people who are just really upset about the homeless on the streets, particularly downtown. It's you kind of want to say, well, it could be worse, but it in many ways it really can't be worse. All I can do is just explain what our program looks like, what we're doing to try to resolve it inside of the law. I mean, we are really constrained. People want to get rid of panhandlers. Well, that we are told by the city attorney is free speech.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we really can't, unless an officer is there and sees a guy run into traffic who he can ticket, who is not going to have the money to pay a ticket or is not going to appear in court. I mean, it's these are real difficult problems. People camping on sidewalks, that's been approved by the Ninth Circuit if you don't have other kinds of shelter. And we have really at Union Gospel Mission only a couple hundred sheltered spaces. So, but I'll tell you, our police department is doing everything they can to work with people who are homeless or, whatever, to get them to find alternative housing and to get into treatment and other things. In fact, our police department undergoes training in dealing with folks with mental health issues, counseling on addiction issues. It's really a pretty full service police, particularly our downtown police unit.
Considering
really
how many things they cannot do because the courts
it's
have ruled it's a constitutional right to be on the sidewalk. It's constitutional right to hold the sign with your free speech, even it says, give me money.
The panhandlers have been around for since the dawn of time. I mean, you can't really get rid of them.
But it really, people get upset about it, and I understand that. I think we all do.
But there's also that, how many do you think of the panhandlers are actually the homeless, though?
Don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I really don't know.
We don't know if these people actually are doing it as a part-time job.
Our advice is really don't give money
redirect the donations
to the agencies that provide the food, the shelter, the clothing, all the rest of it. But
that's a good idea.
Let's go back to the emails, and gosh, you're responding to all of them, which is awesome. I know counselors all get their own phone number. But people, they don't have offices at Salem Hall, at City Hall.
Yeah, I think I'm the only one. Well, I am the only one with an office at City Hall.
But counselors, they'll get a phone with a phone mail. From my experience, I almost never got a phone call. 4 years as a city councilor.
Did they ever give it out?
It's in the phone book, I think.
Oh, yeah, it is. Okay.
And it's published on the website and so forth. And
so you could look them up and go, hey.
I bet I didn't get 5 legitimate calls in 4 years.
Yeah. Huh. The one that I think people understand the least, and I've gotten several lately, are on land use issues. Mm-hmm. And land use issues, we are not allowed to respond to those. It's called an ex parte contact, and we really can't engage. All that goes on in public hearings where everybody gets to hear what everybody else has to say, including the elected officials. And I think that's the most confusing, is sort of a, please don't rezone this land. I'm not supposed to read it if I can identify what the subject matter is.
Why not?
It's court cases.
So things that are supposed to be done in public, you can't have Simon Legree say, go over and nudge an elected official and say, well, I want you to do this with this land use. I want this to be zoned like this because, hey, do me a favor here, buddy. That needs to happen in public in a public hearing. It needs to be declared and it has to be announced and blah, blah. However, sometimes when you get written communications to a council and or mayor, that can become part of the public record.
Right.
Then it's not ex parte, as they say. It becomes part of the record. We receive citizen input, and that's what one counselor can do, or a counselor or a mayor, and say, I received this input. Please put it on the record as citizen input or something like that.
That's how I handle it. I take all that kind of communication and forward it to city attorney to be part of the public record.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it does
get
confusing.
There's a lot of rules. There are a lot of rules. Oh,
there are a lot
goodness.
Of rules.
In land use, and some of them there to protect us. So
I get it, but
I think a lot of folks believe that there are contacts that go on with developers. Actually, the developers are least likely to contact you because they know they're not supposed to.
Right.
Someone who does contact you, who's going to develop some land, wants some rezoning, probably hasn't done it before and doesn't understand quite how legalistic our land use system is.
So one of the reasons I ask about, because the counselors, they're all going to be varying levels of responsiveness, right? And the Build It Now, the Salem Bridge Solutions people are still active, and they actually did a public records request And according to their newsletter, like 90% of the emails that went into the city councilors were pro-bridge, build the bridge, 90%.
I remember reading
real
that.
Real documentation of how people who voted no absolutely did not listen to the citizenry.
That's why he asked you.
So it's one of the things. I want to know, I mean, we've got Mayor Bennett, of course, but when we say email your counselor, we should add call your counselor, because they're not getting 50 calls a day. They're really not. And then those calls could be effective. And, you know, sometimes you can get one to meet you, maybe, because most of them are working full time.
Yeah.
A lot of them are. But maybe you can meet with them in person at some point, or at least to get a phone conversation. So do you think email to the counselors, notwithstanding the bridge system, do you think they're being read? Do you think they're effective? Should we continue to encourage people to emailing and call their counselors?
No, I think they are effective. If it does nothing more, it alerts counselors to issues that are on people's minds. I mentioned the library book issue. I've gotten a lot of emails about that, both for and against what's going on, but primarily real concerned, and a lot of it is just trying to find out what's going on. And we can answer those kinds of questions. We can sometimes be helpful in explaining what's going on, or at least how the information is coming to us right now.
So when the mayor goes on vacation, the council president takes the place and runs the meeting. But did you know that there's a guest counselor program? So if you're interested in that, call your counselor and say, hey, put me in. If a counselor's going to miss a meeting, they can have one of the people from their ward sit in. Mm-hmm. They can't vote because they haven't been elected, but they can sit in, they can participate in the discussion, and they can watch the process.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
Yeah, it's supposed to be someone from your ward, and if you're a counselor, and they're allowed to serve, I think, once a year. You can't have the same person time after time. But, I think that's a really good program. And it's a great way, particularly if you have someone who's a real activist who'd like to kind of get their feet wet into the discussion, to put them on and let them see what it's like.
I bet that's a real eye-opener.
It can be.
Yeah, I bet.
So many things to go over. We have get the mayor back.
We wanted to talk budget with the mayor. Do you want to stay for another segment?
Sure, I can stay. Can I leave about 12:45?
Yeah, we'd be out before then.
Okay.
Oh, there's so many things. The comprehensive plan's being relooked at, the costs of the flooding, the multifamily changes, but budget. So stick with us. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to hang on to the mayor, chain him to the chair for another segment. This is Brett DeHart with Dave Bourne of 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers, proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
And welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And we've got Mayor Chuck Bennett in here to talk to us just in a few more minutes. You're in the budget cycle, and you mentioned before we went on the air there's the costs of the flooding and mitigation and things like that. I assume that there are some contingency funds when we have special situations like that.
Yeah, there are, although this year has been a pretty rugged year for the parks and recreation folks. Baseball diamonds have been flooded, the parks have been flooded, a lot of debris. Quite a bit of work is going to have to be done. We got a note from the manager saying somewhere between $93,000 and $145,000. They're waiting on the bids right now. It's quite a bit of damage this time, particularly the ball fields. They really got flooded, and it takes a lot of work to get them back in shape. And as you know, as a former baseball coach, it takes a while to get them really ready for use by in time for the season when it gets going good.
How did the softball field? You're talking about the softball fields, well, down in Wallace. Right?
Yeah, they got flooded, and there is some work that really has to be done. I don't have the list of it with me, but it involves both the grounds as well as some of the facilities down there.
Whose budget does that come out of?
Well, it'll come out of Parks and Rec, but how that works in terms of where the manager decides to go for the funds, I assume he'll go into a contingency fund. But just frankly, when you're budgeting, contingency funds represents beginning cash balance when you come into the budget cycle. So it just reduces how much money is available across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can pay for it, but there are some real impacts on the budget each year.
There's not a whole heck of a lot of slush fund going on in the general fund. So.
No. It really, what we maintain is essentially a contingency that becomes operating capital that kind of carries us through to November. So you can pay the bills through to November when property tax collections kick in again.
New revelations, you know, we talked just briefly a couple of weeks ago about the city manager's recommended changes mm-hmm. and to the budget or cuts to the budget.
Yeah.
Anything going on with councilor motions as far as be substantial things that we should be paying attention to?
Well, there are a couple of I've heard a lot about a couple of programs. One is our youth services program. I know there's a lot of work going on to try to figure out how to retain that. There are a whole number of programs the city's involved with, primarily with nonprofits in the community that deal with young people and young people's programs. There's quite a bit of work going on to see how we can fund that inside of available revenue. And also, the loss of the DARE program in the budget has been responded to quite a bit out in the community. There's a substantial support for the DARE program. And I know there are counselors and myself are looking for ways to try to retain those kinds of programs.
Let me ask you a question. Sometimes I just ask the question because I think the listener needs to know as well. But this is a little bit more philosophical.
This doesn't stump the mayor.
No, okay. Not at all. It's more of a philosophical question in terms of, so some of these things that are for nonprofits or for the kids or youth programs, is that the role and responsibilities of the municipality?
Well, it's a mixed bag. The basic role of the city is public health, safety, and welfare. And they tend to sort of fall in the welfare, not welfare as we think of payments to the poor or something like that, although those are part of it. But we tend to focus most of our capacity on public health and safety, which is water, sewer, fire, police. We have some state mandated costs like planning that we have to do and do a certain way. There are support services and human resources and legal services that are really the core of the city's responsibility. And I think the problem we had with our water last summer points real clearly to one of those areas, which is maintaining both a quality and quantity of drinking water, which is becoming increasingly challenging, or has shown up as challenging, mm-hmm. at least over the past few years.
Well, I'll take the algae bloom over Flint, Michigan any day.
Yeah.
Right
over lead poisoning, please.
Well, and you know what? You won't have to worry about it this year. The public works, people pay a water bill, and part of that goes into a fund that becomes available for just these kinds of issues as they develop, as the environment changes, as people's expectations change. So we're able inside, without a bond measure, to improve our water system substantially this year, adding a really rigorous treatment program, both for algae bloom or other kinds of issues. We've had tankers fall over up in the canyon into the water, and we need to have a treatment system in place that guarantees we won't have interrupted water for any length of time. Plus, we are watching closely because of rainfall variations that we have the right kind of quantity. And so we're starting to look at drilling additional wells and beefing up some of our reservoir program.
Yeah, new capacity. All right, well, just have a few more minutes before you have to run off and be somewhere else at the top of the hour. Can we touch on the multifamily proposals out there a little bit? And it was in the news, and I really get this. It's in at the legislature, they're talking about the same thing. How do we increase so that we don't have to have urban sprawl? We don't have to eat up our farmland. So how do we increase some density and allow more things? And sometimes we preach it here at Newsmakers, but sometimes the government can just get out of the way. But there are two sides to this argument in terms of allowing more multifamily for 2, 3, and 4 units and even up to like 12 and 13.
Yeah. Well, the city planning staff through Eunice Kim is the planner who's in charge of the program are really taking a very close look at multifamily siting units, duplex, triplex, quads, in single-family neighborhoods now. Salem, like every other city in Oregon, is required to have a 20-year supply of land for housing, and meeting that is challenging, particularly if you don't want to try to expand the urban growth boundary, which we haven't done for decades here. We do have a 20-year supply, but part of what we're going to have to do is figure out how to increase density. So we've included a program for like mother-in-law units, small additional units in your on your existing property. That helps pick up some of that. But there's still more that's needed. And one of the realities of Oregon's land use planning system, particularly as we grow rapidly, is we've got to look at density, or we're going to have to look at expanding those urban growth boundaries. And suddenly we do have sprawl. And here in Salem, we are surrounded by probably the richest farmland, if not in the state, in the country. And we are doing everything we can to keep from having to look at that again, that urban growth boundary again for 20 years. There's no interest in expanding it. So we will be looking at higher and higher density, which creates parking, traffic, number of people in your neighborhood, the whole shebang comes
into
play.
And more expensive housing, too, though.
Well, right now, we're trying to make sure we have the kind of inventory of housing that keeps us affordable. We really are quite affordable compared to some of the surrounding, in the, at least up in the metropolitan area, and even in some of the surrounding communities like Corvallis and some others where the price of housing really has skyrocketed. We've been able to maintain a fairly reasonable median cost of housing and rent. And so we're trying really hard to make sure that inventory stays in balance and we can keep that kind of affordability. The only thing that goes along with that is you also get growth because people are moving here because it's you're able to buy a house or get an apartment here that's affordable. Yeah. So it's got its push-pull.
We're talking to Chuck Bennett, the mayor of the city of Salem, coming into Newsmakers to give us a rundown on such. So the multifamily, they're looking at, you know, it's going to be a balance. It's going to be a balance for existing neighborhoods. Would you like it if you had a single-family home in a single-family neighborhood and the neighbor, and then down the corner somebody tears down their house and builds a duplex?
Or in the lot next door. It doesn't no longer has to be on a corner. It can be in the neighborhood. So I think this is a challenging issue and one that I think is sort of may not be being caught by everyone in the community. There have been a number of public meetings about it. I think one scheduled sometime here in May. And I'd really suggest this is one of the reasons I think the public really ought to pay attention to the city's website, because all these kinds of meetings and issues and town halls occur and are publicized heavily on that city website.
Does the city tweet? Is there a Twitter account we can get all these things?
I don't think so. The police may tweet. They have a really aggressive.
They're really good at that.
They are very good at it, and the fire department may. But Angie over at the police department, I just have visions of her all the time on her iPhone, putting out the word.
All right, we're gonna let the mayor go. Chuck Bennett, we want to thank you for being here again today.
Oh, you bet. Thank you.
We think we'll schedule you off. We have a special guest for next Tuesday, but maybe we can get you another day next week.
Good,
folks. We're gonna take a break. Come back. Talk about some of these things the mayor's talking about, and set you straight, you know, because he just doesn't have anything right. Just kidding. You listen to Newsmakers.
Sugar-coated here.
On
1430
KYKN, Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Born. We just spoke to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. A few things to wrap up while we're with us with this News at Noon Hour. A couple of things. There's just so many topics, it's hard to get them all done without cutting.
It would take like a week of sitting down with the mayor to cover everything that goes on in the City of Salem.
Yeah, sometimes when you're not paying attention. That's when I'm like, are there motions coming up? Things flying under the radar. Let's clear up what the multifamily situation is. So, and this is really important for people that care about design standards for communities and neighborhoods.
Sure,
and zoning.
Like your neighborhood.
So what they're doing is they're taking smaller multifamily units, duplexes, triplexes, quads, and basically want to treat them like a single-family house. So they just have a permit, they're allowable, and they can build it. Okay. Right now, they have to go through a process similar to, you know, a 56-unit apartment complex.
Yeah, that's huge.
Okay, should there be different standards and different processes for these different size units? And that's a reasonable thing.
Yeah.
But people need to be aware of what it means for their neighborhood, especially if they're in a neighborhood that's not fully built out,
mm-hmm.
or a neighborhood that has extra large lots, because then it lends itself to a house being torn down and then a triplex, and suddenly you're living next to a triplex, right?
Sure. But, you know, if you have a really big lot and you want to sell off part of that, mm-hmm. and build a multifamily duplex or triplex next door on your other part of your land, why not?
And this is where our desire for, you know, living where we want to live and with design standards and so forth, but, you know, conflicts with, you know, not in my backyard, kind of NIMBYism, but also property rights in terms of this is my property and I should be allowed to build a triplex.
Yeah. But then what doesn't look good is somebody tears down an old house that they bought the lot and they don't want the house there, and they develop a row of townhomes mm-hmm. in a neighborhood.
Right.
Looks out of place.
Can.
Yeah.
And absolutely is going to be a balance. All the more reason why you need to pay attention, or if you are passionate about this and knowledgeable, more importantly, about land use, put your name in for the Planning Commission. Hey. It is the second most powerful body in civic governance, really,
Cat out of the bag now.
Planning Commission. All right. So 1, 2, and 3 units, they're still reduced design requirements or process requirements for units up to 12. So simplify them a little bit, which that would be all right when the city can simplify the process that people have to go through to get things done.
A 12-unit place?
Yeah, I mean, they're not saying they're allowable, but they're going to put them in a different category than the one that's 100 apartments.
Right.
Different category
that's
even 25 apartments. But right now, you know, triplex, same as 100.
Right.
So they're going to take, I don't want to get this wrong, they'll reclassify triplexes and quadplexes, because they're multiple family developments now, so they have 60 planning codes that govern parking, open space, children play place, and all these things that may not really matter for a quad.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of rules.
60 planning codes that are just multifamily. And then you wonder why is it so expensive to build a duplex or buy a duplex? You know, why isn't there no affordable stand? You know, that goes back to the thing, hello, regulators. Like, don't
red
regulate
tape.
So much. 60 Jeez. Additional if you go from one unit to a duplex and triplex, quadplex. So, anyway, that's what's going on with that. They're looking at it now. You can try to get a heads up with the council. It's not before the council yet, but it's being developed in the planning department, the City of Salem, also being addressed at the state, as we know, and that's probably going to sail through. Requiring cities to allow some of these things. Like, you get to pick how many of these things you get to allow.
Hmm.
Anyway, wanted you to, we were just touching on it briefly, and it kind of went by quickly, and I wanted to make sure everybody understood. And so early and often would be a good opportunity to get your feedback into your counselor.
Right.
All right, a couple other things. Homeless came up. We had a caller call in about, hey, you know, mayor, make sure we give the mayor a pass, right, because he can only do so much. And I thought the mayor did well explaining that the police are only allowed to do so much.
This is true.
Right, the city, yeah. And, you know, Mayor Bennett has mentioned in the past, he's like, 10 years ago, there was no funding for homeless. It was just not seen as a role for a municipality.
Right.
That they're going to do something about it. He mentioned the Ninth Circuit, so of course we have to jump on that.
Oh, of course.
So you got the Ninth Circuit, and they're giving rights to homeless for public right-of-ways, public places. In the news, the whole thing about people are living on somebody else's property, in this case in West Salem, at the Gravel, Santa Gravel operation. But they allowed them to live there for a period of time. Therefore, they have rights. And these court cases happen, and people wonder, well, why is it so important to have a Republican as a president and nominating judges and getting them into the system? Because eventually, you know, they're going to end up on the Ninth Circuit, and they're going to determine whether or not somebody can sleep on the sidewalk, live in a park, put a tent up in a public right-of-way, what they can and cannot do when it comes to panhandling and all these other things. So who you elect matters.
So
even if we're not electing the judges,
right,
the other people we're electing really, really matters.
So
right?
Those guys, they lived on the sand and gravel place for a little while, and then they were considered squatters? Is that?
Yeah, so now they have rights.
Yeah,
and it's a difference. Now, say they set up a tent and somebody went down there, hey, this is private property. You need to move on.
Yeah.
That's fine. But once the company knew that they were there and allowed them to encamp
for any length of
then
time,
then they get rights. You have to go through an eviction process. Even they, in yours, in my mind,
wow,
they have no right to be on that private property.
This is true.
Zero right. It's not
it's
your
private property.
Property.
Yeah, it's private property.
Well, they do now. They do under the law because they were allowed to.
Who
take,
wrote that law?
They were allowed to take occupancy.
What?
And that persisted for a period of time. Another land use thing, by the way, in case you buy a house and there's any contention on your property line, anytime if you go through a period of time and the property line, you know, your neighbor's kind of using it.
Yeah.
Right? And you kind of let him. Over time, that becomes his property, regardless of where the line is drawn.
Wow.
Right? So I actually have that situation.
What?
I have to do something about with my relatively new property. Yeah, because the neighbor thinks a huge chunk of my property is his property. So if I allow him to think that and allow him to use it for his fill in the blank, rose
right.
garden, dog kennel,
my fence,
his whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then ultimately the law allows that part of the property to go to be moved.
Is that like in imminent domain?
Not like, but
some
it's in
squatter
there.
Squatter from my fence.
All right. We've got a great week on Newsmakers, actually. A lot of great guests coming up. So you got to stick with us. You got to come back.
That's
every
right.
day this week. We didn't get to everything we wanted to today, but we'll be here tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And the next day, making sure that everyone's informed.
All right.
Sound
have
good?
Have a great day.
All right, folks. That's Newsmakers, 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.